the situation with these nuclear weapons that have been demonstrated by the Russian side, when you see the economic situation here, everything screams that there is nothing to gain for the entire Western world, to include Ukraine, to continue this war any further. Why wait until they collapse here in this pocket? Why wait until Kiev itself falls, because they don't have the military forces? Why try to find that out when there's no rational path to reverse any of these things and still keep going with the war? What is the logic here?
Well, I don't fully understand the logic myself, because I'm not a military person. I'm not able to explain things tactically in the way that you've just done about Pokrovsk. But to me, it's been perfectly obvious for a long time, basically since very early on in the war, that we were going to arrive at this point eventually. Because I go back to an article that I remember reading that you wrote right at the start of the conflict, which is that will on both sides to keep fighting appears to be equal. In such a situation, it is the side with the greater resources that is going to win in the end, all other things being equal. And the side with the greater resources by far here is the Russians. So yes, we have been able to balance out some of that resource gap up to a certain point ourselves by lending supplies, giving supplies to Ukraine. But we've never been able to do it enough to change that calculus that you discussed 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So this is what people need to understand. Now, I don't really fully understand all of the thinking. I've explained, we've discussed in previous programs, that some people in Europe want the war to go on because they're worried that the United States might leave. I think that a military defeat in the Ukraine is much more likely in the end to cause the United States to leave than a negotiated resolution would. Anyway, I still don't understand that thinking, though I happen to know that it exists and it is very prevalent in European capitals.
If you're not an expert in the military stuff, that's fair enough. But you are a lot more knowledgeable than I am, I think, in the political stuff, especially within Europe. So let's just look at Ursula von der Leyen, Mark Rutte, Kaja Kallas, etc., and especially Keir Starmer and Friedrich Merz and Emmanuel Macron. That group right there, they are political animals. They love to live to fight another day politically. They don't want to lose. They don't want to have their support cut, etc. It seems to me, from a political perspective, if you can honestly, behind the scenes, away from the cameras, recognizing the calculus that you just very articulately laid out about if the political will is the same, then all other things being equal, it's the side that has the greater inputs, it's going to win. Now it's starting to really play out. So if they are political animals and they don't want to lose, doesn't it seem like that at some point they're going to have to change course, maybe like Bose did there a second ago? Otherwise, they're going to be holding a losing position. And if the expected happens and the military defeat is inflicted, they'll lose politically as well. How does that work out for them?
Well, I think actually you might have put your finger on the problem, because I think these people are now so deeply committed to this. They have spoken so strongly about the necessity to defeat Russia and Ukraine, and they've used that word. I mean, they've actually talked about defeating Russia in Ukraine, that I think they probably fear that if they started to negotiate with the Russians in a way that basically conceded anything that might look like a Russian victory, it would be politically catastrophic for them. Bear in mind that in Europe, we have suffered severely as a result of this war. I mean, we talk about sanctions against Russia, but we see deindustrialization in Germany, economic stagnation in Britain, in France, across Europe. And all of that, as everybody basically knows, is linked to the war and to the economic war that is being fought alongside it. So to come round and tell people in Europe, we did all of this, we spent all that money, we gave all that money to Ukraine, we gave them all our weapons, we engineered deindustrialization in Europe, and actually we have to negotiate and do a deal after all. I think for people like all of the people that you mentioned, that is just more than they can bring themselves to do. So what they're doing instead is hoping that this will go on, and that eventually something somewhere will change or turn. Maybe the latest sanctions will somehow do the trick, or maybe Mr. Putin will fall under a bus, or something will happen. You know, live day by day and hope that something will turn up.
That's, you know what? That is at least plausible. We interviewed a Ukrainian journalist some months back during the summer, and he was from the, I believe it was the Kiev Independent, so not the Kiev Post, so it's, which is kind of more pro-government. This one was at least more quasi-independent, and they were willing to say some things that were, you know, not popular. And I pressed the guy on it once, and I said, kind of like that, I said, how can, you know, you continue to justify going on and supporting the war when all of these inputs are the way they are? And he said something that really I had no comeback to, because he said, basically, we're hoping for a miracle. We just, you know, if we can just keep fighting today, then maybe tomorrow a miracle. I mean, he actually said that. Now, for the country who's fighting, I think it's a terrible way to conduct combat, but at least I can understand it. Yeah. But I can understand it less from the European perspective, hoping for a miracle, because it's just not going to come. And for them to have the same mentality, not under fire, and with their cities not being burned, and the continuing to go down this path with the Russians now introducing new, you know, nuclear weapons, that seems to be counterproductive. But I think maybe that's the best explanation. I don't think I can come up with a better one.
Well, I think ultimately, as I said, there's no rational explanation to this. But as I said, we have this expression in England, Micawberism, which is what it is. Live from day to day and hope that something will turn up. Now, the problem is, it is also a profoundly cynical and inhumane approach. Because Mr. Tusk can talk wonderfully, you know, bravely about Ukraine fighting on for 3 years. What will Ukraine look like in 3 years if that were in fact to happen? I mean, think of the number of people who that kind of language, well, I don't say it condemns them to death, but it sets up the situation which might lead them to being killed. So I think this is a terrible way to think, and it's a terrible way to approach these problems. But it does seem to these political leaders we have in Europe, who I ought to say, as a group of people, are the least impressive political leaders Europe has produced in my lifetime, by far.
Wow.
To them, it looks as if, you know, this is the kind of outlook that they have. They don't want to admit that it's all failed. They don't want to face their own people and explain that it was all terribly wrong. So they just keep going.
And yeah, I can understand their reluctance and their wanting to avoid that outcome. But just in the last few minutes that we have here, what would you project, given your history and your knowledge about European affairs, if the expected happens and the predictable occurs and there is eventually a collapse of the Ukrainian armed forces and they just lose the war? If these leaders we just mentioned don't want to have that hard conversation by choice now, what is going to happen when the choice is taken out of their hands? What will happen in their political world?
Well, I mean, I think at that point, perhaps we could start looking at a massive political change in Europe. I mean, one of the things to say is that all of these leaders are without exception now extremely unpopular in Britain, in Germany, in France, even in Italy, which is less involved in the war anyway, and even in Poland, which is very involved in the war, but which has its own historical grievances, legitimate historical grievances against Russia. The mood is souring, and you could see political forces increasingly growing stronger that are challenging and disagreeing with this whole policy. Now, the trouble with those forces is that some of them don't look particularly convincing or credible as governments. And what they would represent if they ever came to power would be such an enormous break with what has existed up to now in Europe that, I mean, you would, a political revolution might not be too strong a word to describe what might come.
Wow, that's saying quite a bit.
Can I just say at the moment, at the present moment in time, Reform UK, which is the insurgent party, is polling more than the Labour and Conservative parties, the parties that have dominated British politics for over 100 years. It's polling more than the two of them put together. So does start to look a bit like a political revolution coming.
It does, and we'll certainly keep a close eye on that one there. So appreciate you bringing that, highlighting it to our viewers here. That's interesting and something we'll be keeping a watch on. And I would wager that there's probably similar dynamics in both France and Germany.
Yeah.
We'll see how it works out there. But listen, I appreciate you coming on today and providing us such clarity on this. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to be concerned about. And the hope is always that the people can, with their voices, by whatever means that are going on here with politically or with, you know, sending out notices like this or even showing up and protesting here and there, is that we still have the final word here. So we're not without agency or without power, and we're very hopeful that that happens, because anything that can get this war over with will do two things. It will stop the pointless slaughter of people in Ukraine, and God help us all, it may also prevent this from escalating beyond the borders of Ukraine, which would be catastrophic for mankind. And that's why we appreciate you coming on so much, bringing sanity into an otherwise crazy conversation.
Thank you very much, Daniel. And I must say, it's always a pleasure to come onto these programs. And I'm very, very much looking forward to your analysis of the battle that's playing out at the moment in Ukraine. I go to you for military analysis all the time.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And we appreciate you
guys. And consistently right as well. Going all the way back all those years, first article appeared, I've never forgotten it.
Well, thank you very much. And by the way, for those of you who just can't get enough of Alexander, you can go to his channel right there at the Duran. You can see the address right there. And so you don't have to wait another day. You see a lot of great titles just sitting right there. We will take a look at that soon. Thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate you guys. And I will see you in about 30 minutes or 40 minutes from now on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. See you then.